Hi, Ted here. In honor of the summer solstice, we are reposting a set of three shows from this time last year about sort of the religious implications of the solstice. This is the second show. If you look one up in the list, you'll see the first show. If you look one down in the list, you'll see the third show. I hope you enjoy. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. So recently, in honor of the summer solstice here in the Northern Hemisphere, we put up a blog about whether or not the sun should be considered a god or a deity. And it's kind of whimsical, Height of summer is a great time to think about our place in the universe. But the discussion of whether or not the sun should be considered a god does have some, I think, more concrete underpinnings. In particular, the fact that climate change is upon us and is so pervasive and will affect so many things that humanity will be looking for some way to come to terms with it. And of course, there are existing religions that give us sort of moral grounding to think about things. But there may be new elements to be added to how we will we consider ourselves in the universe. What's our role in the universe, etc., etc. So there you go. The question of the sun as a deity is an interesting parlor game to think about. Just to we put up a link to the original post, but why should the sun be considered a god? Well, the fact is the sun is real. You can see it in the sky. The sun, it can be argued, created humanity, created the planet. Again, the sort of question is, would we be here if there were no sun? Well, no. We wouldn't be here. And of course, the sun now sustains our life. It gives us food. It gives us weather. It drives the hydrological cycles, right? So the sun is basically at the core of keeping us alive. You can be a little philosophical and say that the sun, through its ecological systems that it set up, teaches us how to live, right? I mean, that we can draw lessons from that. And it is certainly true that the sun and all the amazing things that happen around it, the solstices, the eclipses, the moon, blah, 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 all that stuff, it's awe-inspiring, right? So, I mean, all those things kind of add up and say, yeah, you could think that the sun was some sort of at least worthy of our respect. Now, of course, talking about new religions is a fool's errand, right? It's somewhere between being presumptuous or perhaps even a little ridiculous. But I would submit that new religious thought is part and parcel of the American tradition. There's a book we'll put up a link to. It's called Restless Souls, and it's basically an investigation of the American tradition of spirituality. I mean, all the stuff you see nowadays about New Age religions, and you sort of dismiss it, or it's easy. I mean, many people commit to it, but I mean, it's easy to dismiss modern religious conceptions. But this book basically traces all those things backward in time, all the way back to essentially the founding of our country, where the marketplace of religious ideas was kind of set forth. They said, hey, there's no state religion, and people have the freedom to shop around and find what satisfies them. And of course, Americans have been engaged in what I would call spiritual innovation since then. I mean, it's also true that religion is pretty much a human construction. There's a book by a guy named Reza Aslan. The book is named Zealot. It's about basically the life of Christ. the lesson that I took from reading the book was pretty much that it was St. Paul who created Catholicism, right? The great Roman Catholic Church. And how did he do that? Well, Paul took what was a pretty revolutionary message of Jesus and brought it to Rome. And then he remarketed, he rebranded it to accommodate what they recognized at the time. So, I mean, in the Roman Republic, at least again, this is my idea, is that religion was pretty transactional, right? You sacrificed a goat and you were good to go, right, to Jupiter. But it was all very impersonal. But there was no God that cared about you. And that's what Christianity offered, a real human connection. And Paul marketed that and basically succeeded in translating the teachings of Christ to the very cosmopolitan Roman population. Right? Just as an aside, I mean, it's clear that, or at least this book puts forth the idea that St. Paul could not go and tell the Romans that it was Roman soldiers that had killed Christ. So he had to make it that the Pharisees and the Jewish establishment in Palestine had killed Christ. And a lot of stuff falls out of that. I'm sure people would debate whether or not that's actually true, but it's an idea, right? That it was, again, St. Paul's rebranding of the teachings of Christ. Point being that creation of religions is a human endeavor. We do it in America all the time. And so thinking about these topics as they relate to climate change is fair. Right? And I would say that because climate change is such a pervasive thing, will force suffering and it will force opportunities and new modes of life, thinking about it is a good idea. And basically making the sun and the moon the center of that kind of thought is pretty pragmatic because it gives us so many other things, et cetera, et cetera. Now, one of the problems that turns out with having a solar deity in this theoretical sense is that it's very abstract, right? And we'll go back to as I said, the Roman religion was very transactional. It turns out that Buddhism is a very intellectual religion, right? There is no God in religion in Buddhism. There's a recognition that desire is the core of your suffering, and so letting go of desire allows you to be at peace with the world, right? And that was the thrust of Buddhism, or still is, I guess. And that led to things like Zen Buddhism, right? Very austere kinds of meditative practices. But of course, most of the people, in a very human way, wanted a personal connection. And so within Buddhism, you got the concept of bodhisattvas, who were humans that could go on, had conquered their desire, could go on to nirvana, but hung around to help other humans. It was a human connection to the religion. And the point being that this is all very reasonable. People want to be connected, somehow a personal connection to the divine. It keeps coming back. People want it. So if you're going to build a religion around the sun, you need to take that into account. And of course, even in this day and age, evangelical Christianity strives for a personal Jesus, right? A personal connection. So I guess the point of mentioning all this is that while our theoretical construction about what a solar religion would look like, we need to take into account that people want a human connection. So if you're going to build a religion, you need to have some sort of a human connection. Well, fortunately, those things exist, right? We have multiple opportunities to think about a human connection to a sort of solar-based religion, right? We have prophets. What's a prophet? A prophet is someone who calls you to do the right thing, who points out what's going to happen if we don't do the right thing, right? We have, what's Bill McKibben? What's Al Gore? Other than someone who's pointing out the things that we're doing wrong, calling on us, you know, the prophet crying in the desert to change our ways. I mean, Catherine Hayhoe, Michael Mann, these are people doing these things. They're prophets of what is coming, and they should be honored as that. And in fact, the analogy keeps going on. These green prophets are not honored in their own land, right? Much as it says in the Bible, right? So we have green prophets that could be human connections to a more impersonal, solar-based religion. We also have what I'm calling an echo bodhisattva, right? Remember, the bodhisattvas were the Buddhists who had gone on and recognized, had attained nirvana, but hung around to help the rest of us get there too. What's Greta Thunberg, other than someone who is recognized in a sense, has moved past many of us to a complete rejection of fossil fuels? She sailed across the Atlantic, right, in a boat in order to avoid using fossil fuels. She is an echo bodhisattva. And if you like Joan of Arc, you're going to love Greta Thunberg. Right? She has already suffered the fires of mostly old white guys telling her that she should shut up. Right? So good for Greta Thunberg. We have climate saints. I mean, think of Eunice Foote, the scientist in the 1850s who first recognized the role of carbon dioxide in warming the earth, right? So there's all kinds of people that have contributed and dedicated their lives to issues around that we now recognize as important for climate change. We have choirs of angels, the seraphim, the cherubim, the angels and archangels among us. Think of it, right? Think of all the people who are standing strong now in Cancer Alley in Louisiana, who are standing strong today at Line 3 in Minnesota. Think of all the people who suffered at the Dakota Access Pipeline. Right? These are people who, right, are examples of what we should be thinking about. Right? We have indigenous leaders, tribal leaders who can teach us how to respect them and give us concepts about how to manage a planet. So anyway, we have heroes galore in order to create a pantheon of people, of human connections to this much larger idea of a solar deity and how the planet and is interacting with all these things, right? There are ways to construct such a thing, and it's legitimate to say, gee, how would you do it? Because that's what humans have done throughout history, to construct their moral, philosophical approach to life. So they have the idea, right? The implications of climate change are so big that it's going to force us to rethink how we think about ourselves in the universe, okay? That's coming. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably understand the implications of that, right? How do we think about that? Well, the sun right overhead is driving everything, right? So it is worthy of respect. It teaches us lessons, and some of those lessons have come to us through the green prophets and the climate saints and the eco bodhisattvas out there that we can help guide us as we try to save the planet. So there you go. I hope that's fun. I hope that's something you'd think about is interesting. What I'll do is I'll put up links to some of the terms and some of the people and some of the connections on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a climate prophet or an eco bodhisattva in mind, please send it to us in an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You're probably listening to this on your smartphone using a modern podcast distribution app. Please tell your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. We're just about everywhere. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade, Under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So thanks for listening to my wild ravings. I hope you found them interesting. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. Bodhisattva, would you take me by the hand? Can you show me the shine of your Japan? The sparkle of your China? Can you show me Bodhisattva, Bodhisattva?
Very cool.